Strokeside Designs is a New York-based fine jewelry company focused on water sports. This is the best jewelry I have found through many years of searching. I love my Dragon Boat Paddle Heart earrings and my pendant. The jewelers at Strokeside Designs have worked for famous jewelry houses such as Tiffany & Company and Cartier. All of the pieces are hand-finished from fine materials. Express your passion for kayaking, canoeing, and dragon boating. Visit paddlejewelry.com and get free shipping with the code PINK. That is paddlejewelry.com and enter the code PINK. Are you a dragon boat athlete? Have you ever thought about joining a team? Hornet Water Sports makes high-performance, lightweight, carbon fiber dragon boat paddles. You can choose from one of their many graphic designs. Don't settle for just a boring black paddle. I love their design so much that I have four different paddles. They also have all of the dragon boat accessories that you need, paddle bags, tip covers, tape, and more. Visit their website at hornetwatersports.com and enter the code PINK at checkout to receive 10% off of your order. That's hornetwatersports.com and enter the code PINK. Thanks for downloading. On this episode, I had the distinct pleasure of talking with Dr. Don McKenzie. 25 years ago, he developed and coached the first ever breast cancer dragon boat team called A Breast in a Boat to debunk the myth that physical activity caused lymphedema. Dr. McKenzie talked about the research project, development of the team, the findings of the project, and the impact that the study has had on the breast cancer community within the dragon boat world. Take a listen in. Welcome to Behind the Pink Ribbon, where we share stories, information, and other content related to breast cancer. My name is Melissa Adams. I am a 12-year genetic breast cancer survivor. I've learned so much through my own journey with breast cancer. I have met some amazing people along the way, many that have become lifelong friends. I have experienced the emotional roller coaster of a breast cancer diagnosis, heartache, anger, frustration, loneliness, and even gratitude. Through this podcast, we will speak to breast cancer survivors, supporters, and healthcare professionals to gain insight and understanding behind the pink ribbon. I have Dr. Don McKenzie with me today here on the podcast. He is the professor director at the Division of Sports Medicine at University of British Columbia. He also chairs the Medical Commission and Anti-Doping Committee for the International Canoe Federation. And he is also the reason why we have him on the podcast today. He is also a researcher that really brought dragon boating to the breast cancer world. So thank you so much for being on the podcast, Dr. McKenzie. It's so nice to have you with us.
Oh, nice to be here.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about dragon boating, first of all. So what kind of took place that made you think, you know, this is, what, 25 years ago almost that you did your research study?
Yeah, it's exactly 25. You're right.
Yeah, so 25 years ago. So what was it that kind of prompted you to say, I'd like to do this pretty unique research study for breast cancer survivors?
Well, it was the issue 25 years ago, and a little bit still today, was the issue of breast cancer-related lymphedema following treatment for breast cancer. And, of course, that's a fairly significant side effect if you do happen to get it. That's swelling and discomfort and pain in the arm, alongside that you've had your breast cancer. And it's a sequelae to some of the surgical and chemotherapy and radiation treatments. And that was really changing the lives of women because they were afraid to do certain types of exercise or activities for fear of developing lymphedema. At that particular time, some information had come out that said, don't do a whole lot of very simple activities. It was really limiting the physical abilities of women because the threat of developing lymphedema was there. So simple things like even knitting, for example, or vacuuming or pushing and pulling, certainly lifting weights or lifting a weight, all of those things were contraindicated. And so women were effectively being penalized on the basis of the threat of developing lymphedema.
I mean, really, so, what do you do? Like, if you can't knit and you can't vacuum, like, what do you do?
That's a pretty limited lifestyle, isn't it?
So, and, you know, and thinking about breast cancer and who it impacts, you know, it's not impacting women who, you know, not only women who are just kind of living an inactive lifestyle, but, you know, these, some of these women are athletes, they're moms, you know, they might be the primary provider for their home and, you know, having to vacuum and, you know, maybe knitting is their livelihood. So that's kind of crazy to me
Well, it was. And these are actually published guidelines, but of course they weren't guidelines. They were telling what people what not to do rather than what to do. So I had done a graduate degree in Ohio State a long, long time ago, and I looked up in physiology and I looked into the literature and found that I couldn't find any rationale for this to happen. So we decided that we'd do a study that would challenge the myth that exercise causes lymphedema. So the first thing we did is look for an activity that was highly visible that had all at least some of the things that were contraindicated. So repetitive, intense, stressful exercise that of the upper extremity, certainly that's something on the list that everybody's saying not to do. So when I looked around for something that fit that bill, and with my background in canoeing, Dragon Boat was actually a pretty obvious solution from my perspective, because you have a great big boat, and put, you know, 18, 20 people in, and it is repetitive, strenuous, physically demanding upper body exercise. And the hypothesis was if the women can do that, then they can actually, and not develop lymphedema, then that defies the myth that exercise causes lymphedema.
So sorry to cut you off, but so you already knew about dragon boating at this point in time? I mean, this was 25 years ago.
Sure. No, I'm an old guy, and I've paddling a kayak, canoe, or whatever, and still do probably for the last 50 years. So I was quite familiar with the sport of canoeing. In Vancouver, we had an expo, which was World's Fair in 1986. And that actually heralded the start of a lot of dragon boating here in Vancouver, because Asia sent a number of dragon boats to Vancouver at that time. And so the dragon boat world in Western Canada was quite alive and viable from the mid to early 80s. And so when 1996, when we were looking for a dragon boat, there were quite a few around. And I've been familiar with them because we actually started what was called the False Creek Canoe Club. I guess it still is the False Creek Canoe Club in the early 80s.
Awesome. Okay. I mean, honestly, I had never heard of dragon boating or seen dragon boating until I became a survivor myself. So, you know, it's right. Kind of mind-boggling for me that anyone outside of, you know, like that it would still be 25 years ago that prominent that you would say, okay, this is the sport that we're going to use for this research study. So that's awesome, really. So tell me a little bit about kind of the, you know, how did you get these women to agree to this? Because here they are being told, you can't knit, you can't vacuum, you can't lift weights, you can't do this, you can't do that. And now you're saying, well, I want to do this research study where I'm going to ask you to do this repetitive physical exercise despite what you've been told. So how did you find these women to kind of, you know, agree to be a part of this study?
Well, that's a very good question, because you're right. These are extraordinarily courageous, brave women who would volunteer for a project with that hypothesis, because you are kind of violating what traditional medicine has said to you, you know, what not to do to avoid this condition. So I have a research lab at the University of British Columbia, and I was doing some actually research on with children with solid tumors, some cancer and exercise research. And when I met a woman that actually was told me about this lymphedema thing, and then she belonged to a support group, and it was a support group that met at one of our community centers. I went over there one day and I talked to the support group and mentioned that I'd like to try this project. I mentioned that to seven or eight women. They went out into their community and found another, you know, 17 or 18. So, you know, that it wasn't that difficult. I think the women who were the first ones to challenge us, were kind of fed up with not doing anything. And this was going to be an opportunity for them to actually challenge that myth. And if they could pull this off, then you give them back some control of their life. So they were very enthusiastic volunteers without really understanding what this involved, because you're right, nobody had been had any experience with dragon boating itself.
Yeah. Wow. I mean, really, like, you know, I think so much about what all of that meant for those of us who are in the sport today. And I'm beyond grateful that there was this group of women that agreed to do this when, you know, it was completely defying what the doctors had suggested. So how many women total did you have as part of this study?
24. The first group were 24 volunteers, and you're right, they were very courageous women, and you know, it wasn't without some not question from them. None of the 24 ever came to me and said, you sure you know what you're doing? But I must admit, there were a few other people within the cancer community and also the exercise community, and some people that I work with at the university said, boy, this is, you know, are you sure you want to do this? And we pursued. As I'm, you probably know, this, it wasn't just dragon boating. You know, before they saw a dragon boat, they actually had to come to the gym and do you know, almost 3 months worth of exercise just in order to get themselves prepared to tackle the sport. So, you know, it was a comprehensive thing. At the same time, we actually started to do some research on lymphedema, some fairly good research actually on lymphedema in my research lab. So separate from the dragon boat group, we started to do some fairly good studies trying to map out the lymphatic system and look at how exercise challenged the system and what it did.
Right. Wow. So, and then what was the length of time in terms of the study? Because, I mean, I would imagine it would have to be over a period of time. And of course, you know, taking into account Vancouver seasons, you know, you can't paddle all year round there. I mean, maybe you could, but you'd be freezing. So what was the length of time for the study?
The study started, the exercise component in the gym started in January, and our idea was we would compete in the Vancouver Dragon Boat Festival, which even 25 years ago was is a large one. It has about 130 teams come to Vancouver for a festival, and that's in June. So it was pretty close to 6 months. We can paddle here all year round. In fact, a lot of people do, but as far as the dragon boat paddling, for most people, they don't come back onto the water until usually the 1st of April or late March, when basically it gets light in the evening. So the on the water part would be for about 3 months, and the exercise prior to that was in the same approximately 3 months as well.
Okay. So, I mean, in essence, you created this dragon boat team that was only breast cancer survivors, and they were called A Breast in a Boat.
Well, exactly. But I must say, I started this program, and very quickly the women kind of took over some of those things like naming it and what color sweater shirts will we have and what have you. So quite appropriately, I mean, this is a project, or was it's a fairly large movement that's driven by the women with the disease, and I think that's actually very important. The initial part, I formed it and coached it, and actually the first year I steered the boat because no one felt comfortable learning how to steer. That's
fair enough. Fair point.
But but really the women took charge of a lot of the media issues, and it was good. They took control of a lot of the components of it.
Awesome. I mean, really, that's I think that's great, because, you know, here you are. The most important part of this for you is finding out the information, you know, trying to kind of debunk the myth that women who have gone through breast cancer treatments cannot do any kind of, you know, strenuous physical activity. But that really kind of gave them, I'm sure, a sense of ownership over this very unique sport, and creating a team that was specific to, you know, the exact thing that they've gone through, right? Just that breast cancer part of it. So I love that they kind of stepped up and were like, okay, now we're going to take charge. I feel like that's usually what females do anyways.
For the most part. Exactly. Yeah, you're correct.
So
it was all about women's health. That's the way I express it. The first crew, as they say, stuck their neck out. It was quite a risk on their part. We actually measured arm circumferences all the way through. It wasn't, we followed people's arm circumferences, the measurements for lymphedema, all the way through the exercise component in the gym, as well as into the competitive season when they're on the water, etc. So, we did actually a fair amount of work to do this, but it, the goal was basically for these 24 women is to show, if they could show that they could do this and not develop lymphedema, then the effect on every other cancer survivor was going to be huge, because that would give people back some independence and confidence that they could return to a relatively normal life.
Right. And so how often were they doing either the training in the gym or on the water training? How often were during the week were they doing that?
It was three times a week.
Okay.
That initially, and that was in the gym or walking, was mostly in the gym. And then when we went to the Dragon Boat, then they continued in the gym one day a week, and we trained on the water twice a week.
Okay. Awesome. I mean, so that's a pretty significant amount of time, again, kind of considering that they've been told not to do really anything.
Sure. Yeah. Each practice is an hour and a half and about the same time in the gym. So yeah, it's a big commitment. For the average age of our group was 55 years old.
Okay.
And you may think back 25 years ago, it was actually not that common to see 55-year-old women in a gym. So Right. They all also opened the door to some of our community centers that, this is a place that everybody can exercise, not just young, fit, healthy people.
Right. Yeah. So then they go and they compete in the Vancouver Festival. They're the only boat of their kind, right? So, what division did they compete in?
Well, there was no breast cancer division like there is now, of course. So we it was in the recreational group against corporate teams mostly, Okay. Which were mixed teams, men and women. There was a few races that would just have women in it, but not related to any, disease component. So it really was the recreational division.
Okay. And how did they do?
We came, first race was, I'll never forget that, actually. The first race, we lost. We were, I think there were six teams, and we were sixth. But the goal, as I said before, the goal of this whole thing was to make it to the start line, not to the finish line.
Yeah.
Because you did all the work to get you to be able to feel comfortable enough to paddle down this course 6 months later and show people that you could actually do this and not develop lymphedema, then you're already a winner. So that was the first component. The first race we lost, we were sixth. The second or third race, though, we were in with a group of again, corporate people, men and women, and we actually beat one of them. So we actually weren't last. We were second last. And so,
yeah.
And as the women say, we're always first in our lane.
I love it. Well, and I think that's important, too, right? Like, there is that competitive nature to dragon boating, obviously. And, you know, everybody wants to win. But I always, I talk to my team a lot about, just recognize the fact that you're here, and recognize the fact that you've been through all of this stuff that has drastically changed your life. And yet you're out here, you're training, you're working and doing all of these things, and you get out there and you're able to race. Like, that's pretty profound if you think about it.
Sure, absolutely. I mean, that's really one of the side effects of all this. And then, I've had lots of conversation over the years with a number of women. I'm still pretty active involved, and we do outreach projects now, as you may or may not know. And, speaking to people and husbands, and, it's payback time, because now mom is the one on the water, and the kids and the husbands have to go watch and be there for them and be supporters. And, the women often say, well, I finally have have control again. I've got back my life. I can do the things I want to do. It's made a big difference. So it's not just the dragon boating that gives them that expression. It's the ability and achievement of training and getting into a position so they can compete in a dragon boat. And the side effect of that is that it allows them to get back to a very full and active life in all facets.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, my story might be a little bit different. You know, I was 31, I was single, living by myself. So I didn't, you know, I didn't have a husband, I didn't have kids, you know, I didn't have any of that kind of stuff. But at the same time, I still felt the impact of not being able to do the things that I used to be able to do. And it was very frustrating. You know, prior to finding dragon boating and being diagnosed with cancer, in fact, I was training with two semi-pro boxers doing, you know, 40 man push-ups in a minute, you know, doing all of these different things. And then after cancer, I couldn't do a single push-up. So trying to find that independence again was really hard. And, you know, finding dragon boating really, I feel in my heart, was truly what saved me in a dark time when, you know, I really had no idea where I was going to go or what my new normal was going to look like. I found this group of women who truly inspired me because they had been through the same thing and they were out there kicking ass on the water.
Yep. You make a good point because it's not just the boat and the activities of the boat; it's the women that you're doing it with, and you know it's a fairly instantaneous bond actually. Even though people come from a variety of backgrounds and socioeconomic status, once you get in the boat, you know the saying "we're all in the same boat." That's probably the place where it means the most.
Yes, it was. I had gone to traditional support groups. And not that they weren't helpful. They served me in a particular fashion. But I was probably the youngest there by at least 30 years, you know, maybe 20 to 30 years. It was very different, very different. And then when I found dragon boating, you know, I was still the youngest on my team at that time. But it was a totally different connection. Like there's a very big difference between sitting in a boat and paddling and knowing that you're surrounded by people who have gone through a similar experience as you in comparison to sitting in a room in a chair and kind of wallowing in self-pity is really what I would equate it to. I hate to say that because, you know, I think support groups are important, but a lot of it was a lot of tears and a lot of, you know, just poor me. And I didn't, I couldn't do that in that point in time. That's not what I needed. So,
well, that's another good point. I mean, at our first practice or our first get together with each season for the novice people, women, you know, I say to them quite frankly, this is a support group, but this is not your standard support group. This isn't about cancer. You know, this is about activity, physical activity, vigorous activity, health, the environment, and the rest of your life. So put cancer away, because when we get into the boat, we paddle away from cancer. It's not about cancer. It's about exercise and health, looking forward rather than through the rear view mirror.
Yeah, I love that. And I really think that my coach, I don't know if you know her or not, but her name is Lynn Franks Meinert, but she... She really taught me that I was not a girl with cancer, that I was truly an athlete. And I hope that I have carried that forward to my own team to show them that, you know, cancer really doesn't have a place on our boat. You know, we've all been through it, but at the same time, you know, it really is about maintaining that physical activity, moving forward. And, you know, I always talk to them too about, thankfully, and I do want to ask you this question too, but thankfully in the time that we've had our team, which has been over 10 years, I've only been coaching for 4, but in the time of the team, we have lost only one team member to breast cancer, which is quite astonishing, really. You know, I always talk to them about, you know, we lift our sisters up who cannot be in the boat with us, you know, and if that's what's going to get you to work harder, then please do it, you know, but really, we have to remember that we have so many sisters and brothers, realistically, who are out there who cannot be in the boat because of whatever reason. And so we lift them up. And that's what we use the boat for.
Well, you're right. You're tremendous role models for everybody with cancer or any chronic disease, for that matter.
So there's a part of the research study. So kind of going back to, you know, the research project that you've done, obviously the outcome was that physical exercise does not cause lymphedema. Is that correct?
That's right. Yeah, okay. Exactly.
And then I have seen a couple of in a couple of articles, a couple of places where it talks about increased survivorship as well. So can you talk a little bit about that too?
Sure. And that's very true, by the way. In fact, lots of good studies now have shown the benefit of exercise in the breast cancer population. At the University of British Columbia, we have a research lab, but we also now have two cancer gyms. And we started shortly after the initiating the Dragon Boat. It looked like it was such a good thing to do, and we were seeing some very visible positive outcomes. We actually started to do randomized control, sort of really solid scientific studies, multi-center trials that you hear about in the research. So we started to do some very, very about exercise and breast cancer, and we started doing the first studies where women came to the gym at the same time they started chemotherapy, and they came and they went all the way through chemotherapy and radiation. And so exercise became part of their treatment. And in Vancouver now, if you happen to get the diagnosis of breast cancer, you'll see the oncologist and they'll talk to you about chemotherapy and they'll talk to you about radiation and talk to you about biological treatments. And then they'll also talk to you about exercise, because exercise now is what we call standard of care. And if you're a cancer patient, you're followed by your oncologist forever, really. Mm-hmm. And so we've been doing this long enough now, and so have some other labs, that you can actually look back 10 and 15 years and you can go back and see how do people do. And so we actually have done that, and other people have published that. And the return for a little bit of exercise is actually about 35% to 40% reduction in recurrence of your cancer. That's unbelievable, right?
That's amazing.
That's just through exercise. We're not making this up. These are things that are published in the scientific literature and the American College of Sports Medicine, which is a big group out of Indianapolis, have just published a number of review papers citing those same numbers. So, the role that exercise plays now is huge. It's not just about lymphedema anymore. It's about your health and in fact, your survival.
Right. Yeah. And I love that that's made mention, because, you know, it really is, when we think about those things that can impact us, you know, obviously it's our, you know, the things that we eat, the amount of physical activity that we have. You know, I feel like as a breast cancer survivor, I want to do everything that I possibly can to prevent the cancer from returning. You know, I don't have a crystal ball. I don't know what the next, you know, 5-10 years will look like for me. But if I can do everything that I possibly can, I am all for it. And I am always promoting, you know, physical fitness, because I do wholeheartedly believe as well that it can help to reduce that recurrence. And, you know, 35 to 40% is huge.
Yeah. Surprising, isn't it? I mean,
it is.
It's as good as a lot of the treatments we actually receive.
So right.
You're right. I mean, you look for what can you control, and as a cancer patient, when you're medicalized, I call it, and you're always going to some imaging center or some treatment or another test or a blood test, you kind of lose control over what's going on with you. And the things that you have control over, really, stop doing some things, nasty things like smoking, but really it comes down to what you eat in terms of nutrition and the physical activity that you do. And those two things you do have control over, and those two things will help you, you know, return, get your normal life back again. So, you know, they become an integral part, and that's why we call it standard of care. That's something that's integral to the treatment of cancer, is physical activity.
Absolutely. Well, I love that. I honestly do not know if in the United States, cough, cough, anyone listening, that standard of care during chemotherapy also includes physical activity. I don't know that we're there yet. But I would hope that that would be something that we would look into and start doing. I think that doctors are becoming more aware of it has to be more than just treating the disease. Because the whole person has, you know, the whole person is affected, and there has got to be some things in place to help the whole person heal through this, not just taking care of the disease.
Yep, absolutely. You're correct. I mean, we're changing traditional medicine, and you know, takes 15 to 20 years, and it's almost by osmosis that it occurs. But you're right. In what the Western world, North America now, there's getting more and more traction about the importance of exercise. There's other parts of the world, unfortunately, and that's where we do these outreach projects or programs where we go to countries that are still thinking that, well, you've got cancer, take it easy, don't do anything, certainly don't go do anything vigorous. So we go to these places and we actually start Dragon Boat teams.
I love it. Well, I know that there is a new team that has popped up in Fiji, so that's pretty awesome for breast cancer survivors. I've seen that on Facebook.
Yeah, that's coming up this weekend.
Oh, okay.
So we'll go there and to Fiji, but you know, we've been to Colombia and Brazil, Argentina. We had a group from in Patagonia before Christmas. So you know, we need to push this a little bit, because the idea that exercise is an integral part of healthcare is well known in the Western world, but it certainly isn't in other parts of the world. And we'll be looking at Asia as another place where there's also a stigma of having breast cancer in some countries, where you feel like you're kind of, well, there's something wrong with me just because I've had a disease such as breast cancer. And I think we need to kind of address some of the social things that come out of having a condition like breast cancer. But, you know, exercise, physical activity, getting people together in a group is one way to help, push that agenda.
Absolutely. So I want to talk a little bit about, so there's kind of this governing board, if you will, the IBCPC, which stands for the International Breast Cancer Peddlers Commission. And I know that kind of came about through the research project. And so, you know, can you talk a little bit about the creation? Were you part of the IBCPC, or, you know, how did that all kind of come together with your research study?
Well, this is well past the research study, but it actually was formed by a group of the original paddlers, actually. The women who were in the first team have stayed on. A lot of them have and continue to be involved. And some of them decided that we needed a governance model to actually run this. As teams started to evolve throughout the world, they were looking for some guidance and some leadership. And so a lot of it was coming through the original team in Vancouver, and I've been a part of that IBCPC since we started it, which is probably 10 or 15 years ago now. It was really just formed by the women, for the women, to provide leadership and guidance. And one of the things that came out of that was that we started having what we call participatory regattas, and that means, you know, the first one was in Vancouver after 10 years. The 10-year anniversary of the Breast in a Boat, we invited all the teams who wish to come to Vancouver, and it was just a regatta for breast cancer survivors. And since that time, we've now had five other ones. The last one was in Florence, Italy, in July of 2018. We had about 4,500 women with breast cancer who came. I'm not sure if you were there.
We were there.
And the next one, as you would well know then, is will be in New Zealand in 2 years' time. So I think those are important things. And, I mean, it's called a participatory regatta, but, you know, my bumper sticker says paddle for fun, race to win. So no one ever actually goes out to come third or fourth. But the idea is that it's a participatory regatta because it really is just stating a message to the world. This is a global movement now. Women have taken back control of their lives, and the value, they value the exercise and the camaraderie and the love that comes with a regatta like that.
Yeah. Well, and it is truly powerful. So before I moved to Phoenix, I actually lived in Pittsburgh. And so my first participatory event was in Sarasota, Florida. And So our team, which at that time was Pink Steel, my team.
Right, I remember that.
Yeah, and so we came in second in the world. We like to tell people that we came in first in the United States, second in the world. But it was the most powerful experience I had ever had, in the time that I had been a breast cancer survivor. And so when I came out here to Phoenix, one of the things that I wanted to do was allow the women here, because for the most part, it was really kind of just recreational. They would go to maybe Vegas. They would go to Long Beach. They would obviously race in their own festival, but they had never really branched out. And so I made it my goal to take them to Italy. And for many of them, it genuinely changed their life. It really did. Yeah, so we are super excited about New Zealand. But I have one last question. I feel like I could actually talk to you all day because I love dragon boating, and it has really changed my life. The impact that it has had on my life is just profound. And I can't imagine ever not being a part of the community. But kind of thinking back 25 years, when you started this one dragon boat team, did you ever envision that here we are 2020 and currently there are 200 breast cancer survivor teams across 25 countries? Did you ever imagine that that would happen?
No, not at all. I mean, this was going to be an investigation to defy the myth that exercise caused lymphedema, and the dragon boating was chosen simply on the basis of my personal experience with the sport of canoeing. And so it worked out very well. It did what it was supposed to do. And, I would have been surprised, but at the end of the 6 months, we had the answer that we were looking for. But I also saw the joy and the love and the camaraderie and what that 6 month period did to both the physical and the mental health of the women that had been in the boat. And I saw that they weren't going to give this up. And so, as I said a long time ago, I lost control over it back then. And so next year when the season started, we had two teams, and then there was a team in Toronto, and I think another one in Montreal, and one across the pond in Victoria, BC. So it's just exploded. I think we have well over 300 teams now. There's teams that we just don't know about until I finally hear, there's five teams in Brittany, part of France, that not everybody's registered with the IBCPC, for example, but there are teams that come out of the woodwork, and which is terrific, because it's then driven by the women with the disease coming together for themselves. And when I look back, one of the things I must say is that the criteria for becoming a breast cancer dragon boat paddler is only one thing, and that's breast cancer. Mm-hmm. And you see at the participatory regattas, there are women who are 27 years old, and we have women in our boat from Vancouver who were over 80.
Yeah.
And so we have to make a place in that boat for the people who really need it, and it can't be done on the basis of fitness or health or et cetera. We try to accommodate everybody. We say there's always a seat for everybody. And as soon as we start to take it too far towards the competitive side and exclude people who feel that they aren't fit enough or are too old, then we lose a little bit of what this thing was all about in the first place. So we always kind of go back to the basics, what started us and where are we going? And sure, there's teams that want to be more competitive, and fair enough, but there always has to be a place in the boat for the woman who's older and weaker but really needs this. And I'm sure most people understand that, but it's an integral part of this whole program is women's health and support that you're giving to each other. And then side effect is you get to go to a nice group of places. The regattas are always in nice locations. It's fun to compete. Everybody likes to race. It's good for you. You like to train hard. But you have to have the whole package in place. It has to be a place for the women who may not be able to join. In Vancouver, for example, we have a boat that we call the Boat to Nowhere. And that boat does not race. That boat just goes out and trains and exercises. They're there for physical activity. And they go to the regattas, the women, but they don't race in the regattas. They go and, you know, they've got a number of reasons for doing that, whether or not they have existing disease or they just don't want to compete. But, you know, we have to have the complete package wherever we develop this program, and the complete package goes all the way from a boat to nowhere to the competitive team that is now competing outside of the breast cancer races against women who don't have breast cancer, but they're good enough and fit enough and expert enough that they can challenge, everybody else. There's no reason why you can't do that.
Right. And I love that. I think that's a really great point. And, I talk a lot about, we get new people pretty often in our boat. And, I try to provide one-on-one training for them inside the boat. And, a lot of times they get super frustrated. And I always look at them and I say, just remember that none of us came out of the womb paddling a dragon boat. Like, we all started at day one. You know, we were all here at that same time. Yep. And I also tell my teammates, too, that, look, if being out on the water is where you need to be, but you don't have the strength and you don't have the ability to, paddle that day, just come and sit in the boat. There will always be a seat open for you.
Because, yeah, good for you.
Yeah, it is all about making sure that we're inclusive and that we are allowing everybody to have that space if that's what serves them.
Great. I love to hear that, Melissa.
Yeah, absolutely. So I really want to thank you so much, number one, for being willing to come onto the podcast. I know that you're a busy man. You've got a lot of things going on. And I also want to say thank you from the depths of my heart for going outside of, what was recommended by the medical field in terms of dragon boating, and really just acknowledging that this genuinely has changed my life. And I can't really put into words right now, because I just, the amount of so much has been given to me in my life because of dragon boating. And there are so many things that I want to thank you for, and I can't really even find the words, but I really just want to say from the depths of my heart, thank you so much for being the leader in this, for being somebody who wanted to defy, or debunk the myth related to physical activity, for those of us who are survivors, and for really giving us our lives back, because I think that's what you've done.
Well, thank you for the kind words, Melissa, but also thank you for doing this podcast, because I think this is another way that this information is given to women, and they will hear this and they can realize that, a full physically active life is there for them. So once again, thank you for taking on this task as well. It's an important way of communications, extraordinarily important in all of this.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Yeah.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Behind the Pink Ribbon. Don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe. If you or anyone you know would be interested in sharing your story, please send an email to podcast@behindthepinkribbon.com.
Thinking about advertising on this podcast? Our ads not only create awareness for your brand, but also contribute to the continued growth and support of this show. Email us today and be on our next episode. Email podcast@behindthepinkribbon.com for more information. You've been listening to Behind the Pink Ribbon, produced by American Creative Consulting, mixed and mastered at Riverview Podcasting Studios. For more information, please visit designbyacc.com.